You are listening to Fees Always Win Investment Club, the number one rated podcast recorded at this exact location in Texas.
What's a rip?
A rip, commission. That's why we work here.
We make huge rips.
No, I don't. I still don't know how it works.
But you and me, the brokers, we're taking home cold hard cash via commission.
Right.
No matter whether our clients make money or lose money, Duke and Duke get the commissions.
The only thing we don't know is your fee.
My fee is the free market. And you're part of it. Yeah.
Welcome back and thank you for joining us. This week, we are back for a second again. We talked about yield curves on episode 32. Episode 33, we are talking stocks, how they performed last week, where do we think they're going, and we have some stories for you. We are talking tales from the tour bus, but I don't think that's investment material right now. But it's a Scion of the Delta recommendation. And speaking of that, he returns from his great journey to the Delta. And back to the great state of Texas, we are joined for Fees Always Win Investment Club show. Two investors on a journey to learn more on the strategy, indicators, and knowledge to become great investors. You can find us on Facebook, iTunes, and probably every other place you get your podcasts. Call and leave a message on our voicemail line, 281-645-9205, and leave a rating on our iTunes page. It's 5 stars. We'll read it on the air. If you would like to support the show, you could sign up for a Robinhood account by following one of the two links in the show notes. Join Robinhood and you and one of the hosts will get a stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint for free. How goes it, Elo?
It goes well, Chris. That was a sway in the morning level introduction right there. So good job, sir. Good job.
You ain't got the answers.
Hey, man, we some real hyenas, though.
Man, come to think about it, was that the breakdown of Kanye, that moment on Sway in the Morning?
It created a whole different buzz. You know what's funny, though? That began a downfall for Kanye, and it really put Sway on the map. Like, I knew who Sway was, but after that, like, everybody knew who Sway was. Like, you couldn't deny Sway after that, because That made all kind of news. Like, everybody was talking about that.
Got him all the ratings.
Yeah, it overshadowed because Kanye did an interview on Breakfast Club with Charlamagne. I mean, that was a good interview, but it was nowhere near the interview that Sway got from him.
Because Sway isn't on regular radio. He's on, like, Sirius or something. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a lot harder to do. A lot more comfortable, but a lot harder. And we get the Five Fingers of Death and all the freestyles. Sway is the closest thing we have to Rap City the Basement. It's probably better, exactly. But it's not my childhood, so it's not better.
That's a fair point. Because, you know, but Big Tigger was Big Tigger. Like, I know a bunch of different people hosted, but for me, Big Tigger was the creme de la creme when it came to Rap City in the Basement.
Did Big Tigger's album ever come out?
I don't know.
Like, he always talked about his album. Big Tigger, the album, coming soon.
That's like free. Like, I'm quite sure Free probably put out an album, but I never heard much about it. Like the dude from American Idol Season 1, Justin, the one who's doing the Dr. Pepper commercials with the Prince-style voice. He may have put out an album, but I didn't hear anything about it.
I'm not even sure who the reference is on that one.
Oh, wow. That just goes to show you. So Kelly Clarkson won, and he was the runner-up for American Idol Season 1. I'm aging myself right now. That's all that is.
I was the one who only watched the first 4 weeks of American Idol to see the people cry. Once it was people realizing their dreams, I was done.
Yeah, I came to understand then and there that there are people out here thinking they can sing because they got friends and family that just don't have the heart to tell them to trash.
And I realized that people will stand in the line for anything, even to get embarrassed on national TV, just to get on TV. They knew they couldn't sing. But they just want to be on TV so bad, they waited in line for almost 24 hours.
They just want that attention, man. Like, a lot of people want to be famous, and then there's other people who just want to be infamous. The only problem with being infamous is you don't really get a bunch of money for being infamous. You're just known. Maybe not always for doing the best things.
Yeah. I don't think you want to be infamous. You'll much rather take the famous. Because now, infamous, I feel like, used to be like that. Now I feel like infamous is more of an opportunity to stretch out their 15 minutes of fame because of YouTube and because of the monetization of social media. You pull it right, you could be infamous. Like that little girl who always says, catch me outside.
Right.
Like, she leveraged that one thing on someone else's show to getting, so I think some record label paid her a contract.
Yeah, I think she did get a deal, but that goes, you send me the numbers for like Logan Paul and all these other people on YouTube and the money that they're making.
Just put me at number 100 on that list. If 20 is getting $14 million a year, I'll take what 100's getting. That means it could be someone right down the street from you clocking paper and you have no idea. Yeah. Because no, you're not on YouTube.
No clue at all.
Wild.
It makes me wonder, though, like with Issa Rae. I know she had to deal with HBO, but, man, she would have stayed working on YouTube and would have really blown. Would she be making more based on the ownership? I don't know how that works, though. I don't know how that tax works and how YouTube gets a cut of that. So maybe it's different. I don't know.
No, I think you got a point there. Like, how much more would it have been? Like, she might have not had the platform and the broad distribution. Like, I would have never really known who Issa Rae was, but there would have been millions of others, and she'd be making all this money, living in a whole different world. I bet that this is how parents felt when MTV was on the air and readily available to everyone, but they knew no idea who these artists were. And now it's all on the internet. And my generation is the generation slipping away from that we don't have that reference point. It's all of the younger millennials that have that, or whatever the modern day kids are.
Yeah, the next generational gap is going to be so far and few between. Like, it's going to be hard to find any commonalities because it's basically speaking two different languages now. Like, it's starting to transition into that. Like, communication is different now. Like, we talked about this before. When I was dating, I may would use Facebook, but really it was walking up to a girl and shooting my shot, hoping for the best. Now, it's Instagram, and it's not even exchanging numbers. We share Instagrams, and we could be talking for 6 months to a year just on Instagram and Snapchat.
Sliding into the DMs is something my generation wasn't truly a thing. Like, yeah, it happened, but not as – I think that's how people talk now. Like you said, they ain't like, let me get that number. Like, we'll talk on here until you just FaceTime it.
And it's apparently – and I'm just going off of what I've heard. I could be wrong. But a woman can like you, but she doesn't want to give you her number. So she'll only deal with you from Instagram or Snapchat. And that way, if things go left, you don't have her number where you can't keep bothering her. And it's like, wait, what? It's just different now.
She's like, I could just block you online. Perfect. Like, I understand women who would think like that. Like, good. You shouldn't trust all these dudes with your number. Because changing your phone number costs money.
Yeah, it does.
Changing username does not.
No, it does not. Or, hell, just hit block.
Right.
Or mute or whatever. Like, you got options now.
Options. And so, well, let's go through some of these stock picks. It was a troubling week out in the market. The S&P 500 was down 4.6%. The Dow Industrial Average dropped 799 points in a three-day period, and that's with a break on Wednesday due to the service of President H.W. Bush. That being said, the Fees Always Win Investment Club Index was down 5.94%. The E Index, only 7%. The C Index, 3%, or 3.81%. But how did your individual stocks do? Any insights you pulled in this week? There were a lot of quarterly earnings coming through. We could start with you with one of yours.
Yeah, so if you go back and listen to the last episode, the hope, I still have the hope, but the pick that I thought was going to be like the smart pick, like the pick that nobody saw coming, the Chicago Bears, the stock picks right now. Ollie's Bargain Outlet, OLLI. So they started at 88.7. And they fell to 69.11, which is a drop in 22.9%, which I can't really explain because, Chris, we were talking about this. They're growing. They are really growing. And over the past year, their numbers look great. So I am just going to check that to, you know, a bad season. But I still have faith in them growing. But I still have my number that if they, you know, start to fall down at that certain number, it's going to be trying to pull out. But I have faith in them, man. What about you, Chris?
I never heard of Ollie's Bargain Outlet until you brought it up last week. But once I read about them, I have confidence. They beat their earnings reports consistently. They're opening new locations all over the U.S., so they're in a growth mode. I feel like their report just came out at the wrong time and investor sentiment took them down. Maybe because they're not exactly synonymous with Christmas shopping yet, and that might be the concern with them. But I personally picked up a few shares of Ollie's, and I have to stick it out now. So when this next pop comes in the summer, I'll probably hold on to it and ride this wave all the way. But my first pick was Salesforce CRM. They were down 4.81%. Another one, I think it's just the market sentiment. Third quarter earnings report, their unearned revenue climbed 25%, which is in the billions of dollars, and that accounts for revenue that can't be added to accounting yet. That's why it's unearned, but they know it's coming in. That differs from their outstanding contract, their performance obligations, and those would be large companies that have contracts with Salesforce to implement it in their system. They know they have 2 years of money coming in. That's $21.2 billion coming in, and they're still the fastest growing business to internal business software right now. They purchased one of their closest competitors in MuleSoft, so they're cornering the market. I'm still confident in them. The stock price might not show it, but I'm going to pick up a couple for sure. A couple more, I mean, for sure. How about your next one?
My next one for me was Comcast, CMCSA. Started out at $38.89. Fell to $37.41, which was $3.81 decrease. But for me, I'm still holding steady because we talked before projecting the future based on the company that they purchased, based on what I feel is going to be a strong 2019. So, yeah, it's a small drop, but we've seen it before where things can drop and then all of a sudden they can accelerate in the opposite direction. They can spike as well. So I'm not too worried about that. I think we'll be good on that end. Long term, I still think it's a good play. I just think that we hit a point right now where stocks in general just were falling. So I think they dropped, like you said, 750 points. And then basically 1,500 points over the past couple of weeks. So it's just that time. This is that time where you got to ride through the storm.
And I think, next pick? And if these weeks have taught me anything, it's that importance of diversity. One is an example of the smaller indexes that are aligned with just industrials. Industrials are naturally going to be the ones hit more from a trade war. So the Dow is going to have way bigger swings than the S&P 500. One is a account that's under 50. S&P 500 is 500 of them. So you have diversity in there. If you look in your portfolio and you're beating what the S&P 500 is doing, you're a good investor, even if that beating is losing money. If you're making money in this market, then you should probably be running some type of firm, because not many are, and most investors are losing value in their portfolio. But that doesn't quite mean losing money until you cash that portfolio out.
Right.
And so my next one was Nike. They're down 2.11%, so much less than the S&P 500, about half of what the S&P 500 losses were for the week. So Nike, in this most recent quarter, they have 17 years of consecutive dividend increases. Though the dividend is still small, that's probably not the best reason to invest in it, but it shows that they're trying to create stability and return money to the stockholders. This would be the opposite would be InBev, or Budweiser that is better known of, cutting their dividend so that they could free up more cash flow for investments, as that category is getting way more difficult for them. With Nike, their second biggest competitor, Under Armour, beat the third quarter earnings with an aggressive push overseas and direct. Going to stores, I see there's multiple Pumas out now, and they kind of look like Adidas, which is ironic since those were brothers who hated each other. But Jay-Z's doing something over there, so it's looking aggressive. You're seeing them at all the stores, so that market's getting more crowded. One other thing about Nike that stood out to me is they came out with the list yesterday, the top 10 tweeted about athletes of 2018. Only three of those athletes, Kawhi Leonard, Tom Brady, and Steph Curry, were not directly endorsed by Nike. Though, all 10 of the athletes on the list wear the Nike check mark at work. Because the NBA has a Nike logo or Nike contract for the jerseys, Kawhi Leonard and Steph Curry still wear Nikes, even though one's wearing New Balance and the other is wearing Under Armour. And Tom Brady, playing football, NFL, has a contract with Nike, even though Tom Brady's is invested with some boot-making brand. I can't remember what it is.
Uggs.
That's correct. Uggs. So just something to think about when you hear of what is the money that companies are spending for endorsements. This is one of them. No matter what, the top 10 tweeted athletes in America for 2018 all have pictures in Nike gear. I'm not sure what that accounts for. It accounts for something. And so I'm going to continue my investment in there really strong, probably invest a little more.
Nike, at the end of the day, is going to be a juggernaut. So it's one of those things where you can stick with through however long you want to, because unless something catastrophic happens, I don't really see them going anywhere. They're always going to be in that range of what you want them to be for a profit. For me, my next pick was O'Reilly Auto, O-R-L-Y. Started out at $346.78. Fell to $331.45, which was a negative $4.42 drop off. Something you said before, if you look at the S&P had a negative 460% drop off. So looking at that and seeing where the S&P set the standard as far as what their loss is, I'm not too concerned. Yeah, I see all these losing over 22% is being concerning, but I really think that's going to turn in the opposite direction. Everything else I kind of feel like are following the trend lines of what the S&P is setting, which tells me that come the next quarter, things are going to start moving in a positive direction. That's my hope, at least, especially with O'Reilly's. I'm not really worried about them because at the end of the day, you need parts. And they're a parts store that offers a wide variety. There's only so many places you can go for that. So I'm not too worried about O'Reilly. What about you, Chris?
My next one is Dollar Tree. I didn't expect it to be down this much, but as it's the Christmas season and people are buying wrapping paper, and Dollar Tree has wrapping paper for a dollar, as well as gift bags and all that fluffy stuff you put in it, this has to turn around. If the market's going to get worse, that means if there is a coming recession, that means the overall price has to come up. People have to still spend that money. They still need goods, and they need those goods at a better price. So this, that opportunity is Dollar Tree, DLTR.
My next pick is Intel. Like I said before, I don't want to give up completely on tech companies because I feel like there's so much potential there because we're going into a technological age. But it's always tricky because for one that succeeds, others may have to fail. Intel started out at 49.26, and they fell to 46.24, which was a 4.82% drop. I'm not too worried about that because, like I said, if you look at where the S&P is, it's falling in line with that type of ratio. And honestly, all our picks kind of had a little bit of a drop-off. However, going into the new year, I can see things starting to change for the better. We're coming off of a lot of things that affect stocks regarding politics and the fear of trade wars and things of that nature, stocks being sold off and the power of China. So once we start to get that more stabilized and in a better position, I think things will start to level off and start to go the way that we want them to. And I want to say this is an outlier, but this is just a test to see if you're really going to stick with your stocks or if you're going to panic and get out. So even though things look in a certain way now, even though there's money being lost to a certain extent, I feel like it's going to turn around and there are going to be profits made going into 2019.
And my last one is PayPal. And I'm going to start this with an anecdotal story. I purchased an item, a grill, that was priced at a point that was too good to be true. I knew that price to be too good to be true, but it was too good to pass up, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the item was supposed to arrive in 4 weeks' time. At week 7, I officially gave up. And I reached out to PayPal to protest the cost. It took them a while to investigate. The person wouldn't respond. Then finally, on the last day, before they would just decide in my favor, the person responds with a proof of shipping, and PayPal closed it in the shipper's favor. Me being naturally perplexed, as I do not have a new grill at my house, I reached back out to PayPal. They reopened it. They didn't say it could not be reopened. They reviewed it, and they realized the guy's just been shipping them to his own house in New Zealand with other people's names on it. So that's how the hustle works. As a result, while on the phone, PayPal moved that money back into my PayPal account, refunded me that in PayPal credit. I could transfer it to a bank account if I want. I could leave it in there because I buy other stuff with it. But that goes to say, if I spent that on my credit card and they did the same investigation and it worked, I'm not sure if Chase or Wells Fargo would have handled it in the same manner, especially after 8 weeks.
They wouldn't.
Yeah, because I think most credit card statements read, if you pay for the product after it's on your credit card, then there's no more time to protest. So it still has to remain on your credit card statement for you to be able to protest it. So I just would have been out of luck. And that's probably what these scam artists are depending on. I say that to say, PayPal is down 3.54%, which is less than the S&P 500 is down by. And they have a couple of new deals that are coming out. PayPal and Hulu are partnering. The streaming service Hulu plans to accept pay with PayPal Holdings, owned by Venmo, for subscription payments on new accounts. So that's a big option right there, and that's going to be an opportunity, as some people who never use PayPal or people who don't have credit cards, but they have money in a bank account that can move over. This is going to only open the Hulu market and probably some more opportunities as a result. I think PayPal's just here to grow. I don't use Apple Pay, even though I'm an Apple. I guess somebody would call me an Apple fanboy, even though I just have all their products in my house. I'm not using Apple Pay. They know enough about me. It's time to share that. And PayPal is working on a merger. They're not sure if it's going to go through. But even if it doesn't go through, I'm not sure there's a challenge to it. It just means that they won't get as much of an entry into that European market as they originally wanted. So PayPal started at 85.81, currently at 82.77, only down 3.54%. I'm still behind PayPal.
Yeah, I mean, shout out to PayPal for the fact that initially they sided with the other party, and then they reviewed the information, found out what was going on, and they addressed it, and they refunded you your money. Shout out to PayPal for that customer service.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely... They have my business now. I'm not going to move to Square or anything else. Like, I might use Cash App for some other things, but PayPal's my preferred vendor if it's coming to online transactions like that.
Yeah, I'm starting to feel like Ernie from TNT. Like, we could use that good endorsement, PayPal. Come on over and get some endorsements here.
Yeah, go ahead and drop it over here. I work for credits.
That's what's up, Chris. I mean, I'm curious to see how things start to unwind as we get closer to Christmas. Hopefully, we'll start to see things turn around in our favor, especially with Dollar Tree. I mean, I would imagine this is the time you're going to start to see things move up because, hell, just a couple of years ago, I was going there last minute to buy stuff to wrap gifts. So I can only imagine what America as a whole is going to be going to Dollar Tree for getting closer and closer to Christmas.
As my son's at the age of daycare where you start inviting other kids to parties because you don't want to have it at your house and a bunch of toddlers running around, we go to Dollar Tree a lot. We buy the gift from somewhere. We go and buy a bag from Dollar Tree and that fluffy paper. That's what we give. I don't wrap gifts anymore. It doesn't happen. Because you know what? Kids don't care if it's wrapped.
They don't.
It's only their parents that care. So you can't just show up with it unwrapped. So put it in a bag.
And then buy that paper. Or if you go into different functions, they have a little bowls and cups and things that you can use, a little silverware. Like, Dollar Tree is what you need when you need it for the right type of price. So I get it. I completely get it. Regarding Ollie's, it's an Ollie's not too far in the DFW area. I didn't know that before picking them, but I want to check them out. I was actually impressed with the store, so I can see things coming, going in the right direction. Like, I was impressed by what I saw when I went there.
Yeah, there's not one in Houston yet, but if there's one in DFW, it's going to expand down here shortly. And so I'll be interested to explore one. The next time I'm in DFW, I have to stop just to get that experience. On your Comcast stock, one of the things I did find interesting, when my grandparents were in town for about 3 weeks, as a result, we had Comcast installed at the other house where they were staying. Comcast, the company that used to set limits on your viewing for Netflix or tried to pass the net neutrality with the JITPAT from the federal communication, from the FTC, Comcast has Netflix on their little boxes now. So even if to keep people away from Fire Sticks, Apple TV, Google, the other ones, they just have their own in there. So you could watch cable, you could look up a show, and the show will say, you know what, there's only 3 Jeopardy episodes on this week. But if you go to Netflix, you can get like 50 episodes. So I logged in with my Netflix, so my grandparents could watch it all they wanted. I think that's forward progress with this, and that's showing that they're willing to innovate. And that gave me more faith in that stock, as typically I think I ignore those stocks just because I hate Comcast as a company. Like, Comcast, give me an – if you want to endorse the show, just keep the internet up. I pay you enough. That's all I'm asking.
Yeah, I the big thing that sold me on Comcast was the merger with Sky. I know they were partially there, but they fully merged with them after things didn't work out trying to purchase, what was it, Disney or Marvel or whatever they were trying to purchase?
Trying to purchase Fox?
Fox. Where did I get Disney from?
Because so Disney ended up with Fox.
After that, Sky being such a technologically advanced type of company, that's what gave me confidence in them moving forward. So hopefully we'll start to see this and it'll evolve even more going into 2019. But I think 2020 is really going to be the year when Comcast really breaks out. But, I mean, we'll see.
Well, let's get into – I think we have 3 stories we're going to talk about. The first one being is – I guess it's just a quick one. It's an IPO notice. The ride-hailing company Uber filed the confidential paperwork on Thursday. Not sure how confidential it is if they filed it, and I know. Never mind. One of the sources said, in lock and step with the smaller U.S. rival Lyft Inc., which also announced Thursday it filed for an IPO, the simultaneous filings extended the protracted battle between Uber and Lyft, which, as fierce rivals have often rolled out identical services and matched each other's prices, Uber is eager to beat Lyft to Wall Street. According to sources familiar with the matter, a sign of the company's entrenched competitiveness. This is going to be interesting to see because who knows what it's going to come out as. But Spotify came out at, what, like $35 around there? I could see... And back in the day, Facebook came out, I think, at like $25. I could easily see Uber coming out at that $40 mark and going up. But they're right. Whoever comes out first is going to get the higher valuation. Because if they come out the same week, they'll get valued similarly. If they come out a couple weeks apart and the first one comes out, starts at 50, falls to 30, that means the investment are... the price of the second one who comes out will fall even more.
That's going to be a game changer. I can't really say too much on this topic, but that's going to be a game changer. I don't know what I can versus what I can't say on this, but Uber and Lyft are known for going back and forth with one another. You know what, Chris? I won't say too much.
I understand.
This is a good article. There's a lot of potential there.
There is a lot of potential. I'll be interested as many more cars are going into driverless. Ultimately, I think whoever wins this battle really comes down who gets driverless technology first.
Right.
And
Uber took that hit when they had the they were doing the experiment with the driverless car and they end up hitting somebody. So,
and they also had that crazy, CEO, Travis Kalanick, that they ran out of it, and they've been pretty stable since then.
Yeah.
Wow. And so this is a different one that I find pretty interesting. A new bill will block lawmakers from buying and selling individual stocks while in office. In the series of measures proposed to limit the opportunity of insider trading by elected government representatives and their high-level staff, Senator Jeff Merkley and Senator Sherrod Brown proposed the Banned Conflicted Trading Act, which would block lawmakers from buying and selling individual stocks while in office. Quote, It's past time to end conflicted trading in which legislators and top staff trade in stocks while making decisions affecting their value. Close quote. Senator Jeff Mularkey said on a statement on the measure, new members would be allowed to sell individual holdings within 6 months of being elected, and sitting members of Congress would be allowed to sell individual holdings within 6 months after the enactment of the bill. Alternatively, members of Congress could choose to hold existing investments while in office with no option for trading until they leave or transfer them to a blind trust. Members of Congress would still be allowed to hold widely held investments such as diversified mutual funds and exchange-traded funds. Couple thoughts on this. I don't think it'll get passed, and that's okay. Sometimes you need revolutionary ideas for revolutionary results. When it does eventually pass, whether it's in 5 years, 10 years, or 15 years, I feel like it does two things. One, it's a de facto term limits. If you can't become a multi-millionaire while serving in public office, maybe politicians won't want to stay in Congress for over 10 years. And I'm okay with that. We need normal people in Congress. Second, lawmakers would have to declare all their investments prior to serving, so no more hiding your tax returns, because that would be part of it to make sure that, one, you're paying taxes, two, you don't have any hiding assets, and three, that it's public so people know where your decision-making abilities are. If this was the case, I kind of feel like there's a lot of senators that would not be participating right now in it. Because how it normally goes, you get into office, you get on the state level or city level, you know where all the money's going, so you go to a depreciated area. Hey, I know this area is getting condemned in 10 months, but then I have $20 million of investment going there. So let me pick up a couple of these condemned homes. All right, I hold it for 2 years, that $20 million comes in, now I'm able to quadruple my investment there. It works the same way with stocks. If I know the government is mandating self-driving cars by 2025, and that's not public information, I go and invest all my money into the companies that are making self-driving cars. And by 2025, I am wealthy because of the position of power that I was elected to.
As you're talking about this, in my mind, I'm thinking to myself, this could be a whole new season of House of Cards in itself. Like the fight to make sure this bill doesn't pass, and then the consequences of it actually passing. This will basically serve as a checks and balances in the way of some of the things we've been seeing. Because what happens a lot of times is people put their money in places and they seek certain benefits, or all of a sudden they owe a favor in certain instances because they had a heads up that I don't know if that would happen as much anymore. And like you said, a lot of people may get out of politics because they won't be able to reign supreme like they did before.
I'm not sure if you listen to many podcasts or if anybody from the audience is just a podcast person. That's what you listen to. You're on the road a lot like myself. There was a good one on New York politics that came out. And I was actually looking for it, but as I'll talk, I'll eventually come across it. But it's on New York politics and especially like the Cuomo administration. And you find out like all the heads of government in this, whether it's the Senate leader, the House leader, or the governor, we're all getting kickback from these firms who in turn were getting more funding from the state as a result of these kickbacks. Eventually, two out of three of them got removed from office as a result, but they were in there for 30 years before it happened. It's called American Scandal, and it's by Wondery. They do a new topic every 6 weeks or so. But check it out, because this is the exact fraud they're trying to avoid. In fact, I think there was a legislator from New York that this happened again just recently, which I think was the precipice for this proposal, is that they really want to stop that. As elected officials, your job isn't to get rich. If you want to be an official, your job is to serve the people. If you want to get rich, go to Wall Street.
Exactly. Like this would take away the whole idea of basically serving yourself and hopefully get back to the notion of serving the people, because if you're getting X amount of money from making these types of moves, then all of a sudden you're serving your best interest. And if it's any way to regulate that or stop it from occurring as frequently, I mean, who knows what the trickle-down effect of that would be. But I would love to see this bill passed. They're going to fight it tooth and nail. There's going to be some blackmail and some dirty boxing, as they say, going on to make sure this doesn't come to fruition. But if it does, we're going to see a lot of changes, and a lot of people are going to start pulling out for random reasons and going into different things. Especially now that you're starting to see gambling become legalized too. Like, that may be the next field that they go to try and make their money.
Yeah, especially with sports gambling. Like,
exactly.
All right, sure. Gambling and betting on the New York Knicks right now for this season. I'm sorry, that's close to home for you. Gambling on the Atlanta Hawks right now in the middle of the season for them to win the championship, that is burning money in a trash can.
It is.
Betting $1,000 so you can get $5 back. Okay, horrible returns, but if you bet on the Warriors, you're likely to get $5 for every $1,000 you bet. That's almost an investment. I say almost because injuries happen. It's not fraud. Like, you're not going to find out Steph Curry was inside traded to the right. Knicks overnight, but it's almost as close as you can get to a guarantee, and that's why the odds are rated that way.
But every so often, you get those Dolphins beating those Patriots.
Yeah, the weekly betting is where it is, especially in the leagues with parity. And the night-to-night betting, while we know the Warriors will probably win, you could probably know they're also going to lose 20 or so games this year that you could bet on and win if the spread is correct.
Exactly.
Well, you had an article as well?
Yes. I have one that's interesting, and the other one is just, I don't know if you call it comical or just showing people for who they really are. All right, so Memphis Shelby County asked to invest pension money into Epicenter Venture Capital Fund. So Epicenter plans to call for $100 million investment pool seeded primarily by wealthy Memphians aiming to aid new entrepreneurs. A Memphis nonprofit agency aims to tap pension funds of Memphis and Shelby County employees and invest the money in local entrepreneurs. Epicenter had asked for a portion of the city and county pension money to enter a new investment fund already seeded with $10 million from FedEx Corporation, city and county officials said. The standalone nonprofit agency was spun out of the Greater Memphis Chamber's Chairman's Circle, alliteration, which listed a new set of goals in 2014 called Moon Missions. Epicenter's mission is aid for 1,000 entrepreneurs by 2025, including 500 newly started firms. The agency has raised about $40 million and intends to eventually pool $100 million for investments, Epicenter President Leslie Lynn Smith said. So Shelby County Mayor Lee Harris said Epicenter sought $10 million from the county pension fund. He said the request has been referred to pension advisor Wilshire Associates for a recommendation. Memphis Mayor Jim Strickland's spokeswoman by email said no investment advisor was asked to consider Epicenter's request. So, long story short, we talked about this before. They wanted to take money out of pension funds and build that over a timeline, and by 2025 start to see the returns of it. Chris, you and I discussed this before, and I don't know how I feel about it because I know the Memphis area. In Memphis, they could use the finances to help build themselves up. Memphis is one of the few areas where in other cities and territories, you see the bad neighborhoods and then there's the good neighborhoods. Memphis is kind of infused where there is a good house, a house that looks promising and affluent, and right next to it would be a crack house. Like, everything is intermingled together. And Memphis is one of the few places where you see that. So I get the idea of wanting to build that, pull that money together and start putting it in the right direction. However, I'm cautious about it too, because it may actually serve to further divide the haves and the have-nots, whereas right now the haves and the have-nots are maybe two houses away from each other as it stands right now.
It's, the more I thought about it, I've come to the conclusion that I think this is a good thing. That's not very conclusive, as I put, I think. I think because with any investment, there's the opportunity to lose money. As the pension is $2 billion and this request is for $10 million, that's promising that it's not even it's not going to be 10% of the pension that they're trying to invest. It's under 5%. So that's a mitigated risk. If they're using this to attract businesses, like, hey, Amazon wants to add another headquarters, let's give somebody a $40 million cut in taxes, this is a horrible deal. And the pensioners shouldn't be subsidizing large businesses to make their decisions to move to the area. If this is, hey, there's this company on Shark Tank, they say they need a manufacturing facility, or this company has an idea, they just need $500,000 to make it come to fruition, then that's a good idea. Because as venture capitalists, you only need one of your investments to hit. That you're putting $10 million out there or $40 million out there in this sense. If one of those $1 million make it huge and you're a 10% owner of that, then suddenly you have back an exponential amount of money if they get publicly listed on as a stock. So in that sense, it's hope for the city. And hopefully that might even, if I would like them to put something on it that locals kind of get first shot, that I've been working on something, I have the business plan, I have some funding, but for scaling I need more as enrichment for the area. I think that would be better than trying to attract outside businesses. But any city could kind of become the hub for development of some sort, and sometimes you just need this type of investment. So I'm actually all right with it. It just scares me that the pension fund is giving opposite indicators than what the investment firm is giving. But the fact the donor tentatively agreed to replenish the city and county pension fund for any money lost for the fund, that gives me much more comfort, and I hope they go through with it.
Yeah, I mean, currently the fund is at $40 million, and if you count the city and county pension funds, it could go as high as 60. I get the notion of wanting to invest in our entrepreneurs, meaning the entrepreneurs of the area. I just don't want it to be a situation where after those investments, we see more gentrification and we see more walls being built instead of bridges into the smaller communities and the smaller businesses that could use that lift also. But, I mean, I'm curious to see it because Memphis is rich in culture. It's rich in people. It's rich in a lot of different things. I grew up only an hour from Memphis, so I know it well. I just don't want to see what seems to be like a good idea morph and change into something else that further divides the people of that area. But I mean, I'm with you, Chris. I'm hopeful, and I believe that there is positive things that can come out of it. I just have to see it, basically.
Now, that was a solid article. I wonder how many other cities are planning to do this.
Yeah. It would be nice if you got some cities in Mississippi that would do it, but I don't know if they would be open to it. Okay, so that was a more serious article. This one is a little different. So, Chris, I'll go ahead and just give you a tagline. None stole $500,000 and spent it on gambling and vacations. two nuns in California allegedly stole more than $500,000 from a school that been at for years, which they spent in casinos and on vacations. Bank records show Sister Mary Margaret Cooper, and Sister Lana Lang have been embezzling funds from St. James Catholic School in Torrance for at least a decade. Officials from the Archdiocese of Los Angeles told parents and alumni of the school that auditors have not been able to trace all of the money trail. Cooper had retired as the school's principal earlier this year, and she dealt with the school fees, which she allegedly withheld and deposited into an account only she and Chang knew about, the paper said. While investigators found the two gave some of the stolen money back to the school, the rest was used for their personal gain. Cooper has admitted she took the money and expressed remorse. Monsignor Michael Myers, the pastor of St. James Catholic Church, sent a letter to pupils' parents stating that Sisters of St. Joseph and Karen DeLay, the nun's order, is cooperating with the parish and the archdiocese to find out how much money was taken. So, long story short, these nuns took a vow of poverty, but instead they took money for vacations and gambling. So I'm curious to hear what you have to say about this, Chris. I know that the article talks about they had a pattern of going on trips, but of course they didn't know they were going to casinos. So I'm curious to hear what you have to say about this.
It's wrong to steal, but as it goes for what the church has spent their money on in the past 20 years, hey, I don't think this hurt anybody.
Do you care to clarify? Because I know what you mean. I just wanted to see if you care to clarify what you mean when you say the church, what the church spent their money on. Are you talking about relocation of priests?
I'm saying the moving around of certain members of the leadership of the church after interactions with their parishioners, specifically their young parishioners, and the cost that has in payouts, as well as the avoidance of legal repercussions.
I like the way you worded this, sir.
That $500,000 for Sister Act 3 movie? I think they got a really good deal. They just should have made a... If they want to get their money back from this, the key is giving them cameras, telling them to do it again, and getting it on TV or YouTube. That's the answer.
The thing that gets me, though, is they did this over 10 years. So by year 5, they weren't fearing being caught. Because it's like you see, and this is the craziest thing. I saw this on a documentary before with people who committed crimes. They would dress up as priests or nuns or dress up in different type of things where people automatically see them and say, ah, it's just a priest. Ah, it's just a nun. People are people. I don't care what you're wearing. I don't care what your profession is. I don't care how you portray yourself to be. At the end of the day, you're a person. So something about you that's rotten. I don't know what it is, but you got something about you that ain't right. And to see these nuns who like to gamble, like to take vacations, and with that kind of money, Chris, I would imagine there were other things going on too. But hey, they had their vices. And after 10 years, 10 long, glorious years, they finally got caught.
Well, that's the show, everybody. Thank you for joining us on Fees Always Win. Like us on Facebook. Like us on Twitter. Check out one of the stocks. Go to Robinhood.com. Follow the links in the show notes. Get yourself a free stock. Give us a free stock. You got anything else, Elo?
Fees always win. That's pretty much it, man. The name says it all. Fees always win, and we are especially learning that after this week.
The opinions expressed on the show do not reflect the thoughts of our respective employers, family, or podcast network. We are not licensed by the FTC or SEC. Before acting on information on the website or from the show, you should consider whether it's suitable for your particular circumstance and seek advice from your own financial or investment advisor.